I hate to be the bearer of bad news, folks, but that's what we do on this show. We got to be truthful. The COVID account of Fauci, he'll probably be dead before any accountability comes. And it's a damn shame. That is a damn shame. That's what identity politics and tribalism does to us.
Welcome to the All-American Savage Show podcast with your host, John Burke, and his far more attractive co-host, me. Now, let's get into it. That's what your mom said.
The All American Savage Show podcast. I'm your host, John Burke. Got a special guest. I always want to say in studio, but it's not in studio because we're poor and we don't fly our guests in. We don't put them up in nice hotel rooms. You get what you get, which is a Skype interview. And you know, hey, that's still an honor. It's still an honor. Now we have a special guest for you today. We have Adam Coleman over on Twitter. He is Wrong Speak and one of the biggest haters of white people that I've ever met. He's here to discuss his new book, Why the Klan is My Favorite Organization to Be a Part of. Adam, welcome to the show. I'm totally kidding. People know you. You know, anybody that listens to the show, they already know who you are. So
yeah.
You just launched your new book. Didn't you have one before this?
So essentially, this is the second edition of my book, Black Victim to Black Victor.
Okay.
It's a more, so to be 100% honest, the first book, when I wrote it, one, it's my first book, it's an attempt to write. And then I had an editor that fell through.
Ooh.
And so it ended up being myself and my wife who were trying to edit it and did the best we could, catch all the mistakes that we possibly could. But we are not professional editors.
Well, now you have AI these days. Have you used AI yet for this kind of stuff?
See, I should have thought of that. No, I
wouldn't trust it either, though. Probably puts like some kind of subliminal like message in there about like robots eventually going to overthrow a human race, whatever. And they'll catch it like years later. Be like, oh, Adam's right. Book, he used AI. See, they were trying to tell us. Yeah.
Black robot to black robot victim.
We'll go with that. Yeah.
No, actually.
Difficulty of the editing process, you and your wife?
Yeah. You threw me off a little bit. No,
it's going to be one of those shows, bro. It's going to be one of those shows. Just brace yourself. Brace yourself. Now, I'm excited for you. When you said you did part deux, I'm like, that's awesome. Good for you. We need more of this, especially. I'm going to shut up because I will interject all over you. That sounded really wrong the moment I said that. I'm sorry. I will keep cutting you off. Please go into depth on your book because I do have a lot of questions I want to ask you about this. And I get excited. It's like, oh, I'm going to bombard you. So tell people about your book, where they can find it. You said the 15% off code. The floor is yours, sir.
Yes. If you go to wrongspeak.net for your audience, John, if you put in the coupon code John, J-O-H-N, you get 15% off a signed book or a non-signed book. I offer both on the website. Otherwise, you can purchase it elsewhere. You can purchase the ebook on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, as well as the paperback. And you can probably find it in your favorite book retailer location. They can order the book for you. But as far as the book goes, the reason I even released a second edition actually wasn't something that I was ambitious about doing. I knew that there were some mistakes, but I felt like they didn't overshadow the message. And it didn't take away from the reading experience entirely for people, just based off of feedback that I got. But actually, someone had reached out to me, and someone that I respect, and they offered to help me edit it.
Nice.
And that is actually something, like doing this entire experience, like you meet all types of wonderful people who don't want anything other than for you to succeed. And,
that's good.
You know, she didn't want anything. She just wanted me to have a better book. And so her name is Dr. Tanya Hedler. Okay. She has credit as an editor for the book. And that was actually the motivation to even release it. I was just going to leave it how it was and just move on. So I'm glad to actually go through this process. The main emphasis, once we went on this road, is like it's a good idea to do, because I want my book to be used at schools. I want my book to be used at colleges, right? And, you know, cleaning it up makes it look more presentable and professional. I want it to be taken seriously as a literary example of an alternate viewpoint, something that's alternate to what the mainstream might be.
Like a Thomas Sowell.
Yeah, in some ways, yeah. A lot more storytelling than Thomas Sowell attempts to do.
So basically, you took your first volume. Is this a redo, a correction, or is this another addition to the first volume?
If you already purchased the first one, it's mostly the same.
Okay.
There are some clarifications. There are a few areas that I took out certain things.
Mm-hmm.
Grammar was corrected. Certain words were corrected. But other than that, this is a more polished version of the first one.
Mm-hmm.
So if you already purchased the first one, then you may not get much out of the second one. This is more so to introduce to the world a better version of that book, and not for someone who already purchased, unless they just want to support me, then go ahead. But it is for people who may not even know that the book existed. I'd much rather have a cleaner version of the book go out into the world.
Mm-hmm. Give me some examples. Give me some things that people are going to experience when they pick up and read your book, when they sit down. What is it they're going to be looking forward to reading from this? Well, how long did it take you to write this?
Start to finish, including the editing, I want to say it was like 8.5 months.
Oh, that's a lot. Okay. So in the 8.5 months that you sat down and you took on this project, what do they expect to get out of it? What are they going to read about?
A very honest and not hyper-partisan viewpoint. it's a very open, loving but critical type of book. The way it's described by multiple people to me, it was like when they get the feeling that I'm putting my arm around someone's shoulder and just telling them the truth.
Mm.
And I'm also empathetic in many ways throughout the book. But it's starting off just talking about kind of answering the question at the time when I wrote it in 2020, what's the biggest issue facing Black Americans? And that's kind of like what started it. And the largest portion of the book is answering that question by saying the family mm-hmm. issue and our relationships. So mm-hmm. I talk about me growing up without my father, how it impacted me as a child, as a way to segue into this is the outcome for a lot of children who are Black.
Yeah.
I talk about feminism and misandry that exists. And I think that's a big portion as to what's going on, or a big reason why the family unit is crumbling. And towards the end, what I end up doing is kind of saying, actually, this isn't just a Black issue. This is a wider issue. This is an area where we can find some sort of commonality, no matter what we look like, because unfortunately, this is a much bigger American problem. And it's not just a Black American problem. Mm. And I plan to, in future writings, to emphasize a kind of raceless narrative about America and our family dysfunction issue. That's what I'm trying to do with the next book.
I was, you know, I'm going to go down this rabbit hole of weirdness, so just bear with me. The other day I was actually thinking about When they say that you want to try and understand the opposition, you have to put yourself in their shoes. And I'm not regarding black people's opposition. I'm talking about more so black liberals that try and use the race card as a get out of jail free card for toxic behavior, things such as that. But when you see such massive upheaval from one race specifically, then it's either that people have bought into the narrative because it benefits them through this victim type of narrative that they don't have to really do anything, or there is literally something there that warrants such uprising, if you will. I want to ask you, and be honest, as a black guy in America, do you feel like when you walk down the street or you go into a business, or you go into a restaurant, do you feel like people discriminate? Do you feel uneasy? Are there moments that you're kind of like, because I'll tell you, like, as a white guy in South Dallas, there are times like, yeah, I'm not going in there. It's like, because I'm fucking white. And it's like, as all these black dudes, like, I just don't feel confident because I'll see dudes on the corner, like, you'll see ghetto areas, like, no, we're not going down. I'll be honest with that. How do you feel as a black guy in America? Do you feel those things?
So I'm not saying this as like, oh, well, right now.
Right, yeah.
A little bit of background. I've been poor. We've been homeless multiple times throughout my life. So I haven't just, you know, right now I live in the suburbs, but I haven't always been comfortable. Right. Or relatively comfortable. I've experienced a lot of discomfort, and I've lived in five different states. So I've experiences in urban, rural, and suburban life. Mm-hmm. And the negative experiences that I face that I would say, yeah, this is racially charged, I can count on one hand throughout my entire life. Now, you know,
it doesn't apply towards everybody. Sure.
It doesn't apply towards everybody, but right. I don't think that I'm abnormal. And also the other thing is I just don't search for it.
Well, in your race, you kind of are abnormal if you think about it. According to them, you're the educated black guy that didn't. Yeah, I know. That's what I'm saying. It's like in their perspective, you are abnormal. But in my mind, it's like, no, that's the average American dream. But then at the same time, it goes back to that understanding of like blacks in America are at an economic disadvantage based upon the fact of inheritance, wealth, generational wealth, whatever you want to call it, but not in all cases. And it's not something that I'm sitting there saying that, oh, this is your crutch to lean upon. It's saying that there are going to be a lot of families that we've seen in very impacted areas culturally, economically, that it's going to be like the sinkhole that they can't get out of. And I think the things that could help them get out of that is the culture, the father in the home, a good nuclear family, things. But then there is the economic issue. So it's kind of like, When you have a lot of these conversations with people on the opposing side of the aisle, they're giving you these examples, and it's like, look, economically, yes, disadvantage, I can understand that. It's like, but for how long? You know,
right.
You see where I'm going with that?
Yeah. You know, actually, I think the times that when there are certain black people who are talking about they've experienced certain things, let's say we'll use police. Mm-hmm. Do I think that the police might treat black people different because they're black? Or do they treat them different because they're poor? And I think it's more so the poor aspect than it is the black.
But couldn't one lead into the other? Because we know in poorer communities, you're going to see a spike in violent crime and such as that. So therefore, if you have a majority black people, so couldn't it be like one and the same, one leads to the other?
Maybe. I mean, if you were to, I see this as somebody who, you know, at one point in time lived in a trailer park and been around it. Granted, I wasn't like running the streets of trailer parks, but like there are poor white folks that live in trailer parks and the cops are always there too. And they sometimes feel the same way, you know, where they're looked down upon. And so that's why I kind of feel like I think the class element is much more of an element than people realize. Mm. You know, if you're rich and black and you live in some sort of area, like you're pretty much treated like everybody else. Like the times that you want to stretch and look for where you're being oppressed, like you're going to be looking match up pretty to the hard.
Yeah.
Right. It doesn't match up. Like it reminds me, you know, O.J. Simpson just passing, coincidentally, like a few weeks before he passed away, my wife and I watched the documentary O.J. Made in America. Mm-hmm. And what was fascinating about it was how they were painting a picture of O.J. living this plush, wealthy life. All of his neighbors are white. Everybody loved him. He was treated amazing. The cops came over. He was buddies with all the cops. But then on the other side, everybody else who was black was being treated like shit. Mm. But the what was interesting to me about it was they can recognize that OJ is rich and lives in a rich area and is treated nicely because he's famous. Mm-hmm. But they ignore the wealth part and go straight to the black people are being mistreated elsewhere. And it's like, well, actually, the black people in LA were just poor. Mm-hmm. See, if there were more wealthy black people who have maybe more power, maybe more influence, you know, they'd be treated a little bit differently. So I think that part, not to say like cops are just going around beating up poor people, but I think that kind of plays into it. And like you said, it's not without, yes, there is some threat. Yes, in poorer areas, they have more crime. There's drugs, there's guns and things of that nature. Yeah. So it's not without some paranoia from a cop standpoint that you don't know what's about to happen. And it seems like a jungle whenever you go out there. But
so let me get this straight then. Yeah. So, and I'm just trying to say this as I make sure I'm understanding you. So say, for example, cops are rolling up on a vehicle and they already know it's got a black guy in it. What determines the level of care, worry, concerns, discrimination, racism even, is based solely, I shouldn't say solely, but is based heavily upon economic class, if that's a poor black man versus a rich black man. If that's what you're saying, I see merit to that. I do. If I'm pulling up on a hoopty with rims and shit like that, it's like, okay, I don't know. It's like, you know, but then if you pull up on like an Escalade, something, a nice car with a black guy, I could see that. I could understand exactly where you're coming from on that. If that is your intent, it makes sense to me.
Yeah. I mean, people don't like to admit this, but we all discriminate to some degree. Yeah, like how someone presents themselves matters.
Yeah.
So imagine like, you know, you have
but
a daughter.
That goes against the narrative that you see people now say, it's like, it doesn't matter how I dress. You shouldn't judge a book by its cover. But it's like, but you're trying to exclude the human condition of that's what we do. And it's what we're always going to do, whether we admit that we do it or not. So if you want to go into this thing of, you know, I want to dress nonchalantly, get a septum ring connected to my ear, my nipple. And yet it's like, I'm not going to hire you. It's like, oh, it's based upon discrimination. It's like you don't care how you look. Therefore, if you don't care how you look. Yeah. So I see what you're saying. Yeah. There. Makes sense.
Yeah. We all listen when, especially with people you don't know, you take whatever information you have about them and try to assess who they are. And so you can decide how you want to interact with them.
Right.
So it makes perfect sense as to, like, if you see a man walking down the street with a nice tailored suit, you feel a particular way versus a guy who's walking down the street with jeans and a do-rag on.
Yeah.
Right. It doesn't necessarily mean you want to go and assault the guy. It doesn't necessarily mean any of that. For all I know, the guy with the suit on, he's a recovering addict and he's going to his first job interview. For all I know.
Yeah.
But based off of the limited information that we have, the social information that we have, there are certain indicators that tells us whether someone is safer to be around, whether someone is of a particular persuasion, behavior. Like if you see a guy with a whole bunch of neck tattoos, I don't care what they look like, you might think a particular way.
Yeah.
Right? Is this guy a biker? Is this guy a gangster? Like, right? Because this is typically associated with someone who looks this particular way.
Yeah.
Same thing with a woman who dresses a particular way. You look, it may not be true, but she's wearing a particular uniform. You don't know. So you're everything that you're doing in snippets, you're assessing what somebody is, what they're about to do, where someone lives, right? If you drive in that particular area and the houses start looking a little bit different, you know, that the roads are getting a little bit shoddy. There's not as many street lamps. Like, what does that sound like? There's a bunch of liquor stores.
Yeah.
Like, we all know where we're going into. Like, you can assess things pretty accurately. It's not 100%, but you can assess things pretty accurately based on limited information. So, yeah, we all discriminate to some degree, and you actually should discriminate to some degree. But the difference is this. Once you have information, then that's when you reassess how you treat someone, how you see someone, right? Once you find out that the guy with the do-rag on actually is a businessman and he's upstanding father and so on and so forth, then you treat him accordingly.
Yeah.
Right. Then that's the difference.
Yeah.
You know, when you find out that information and you refuse to accept that information and you move forward with your preconceived notions.
Yeah. It's like you're not allowing for other data to come in there and change. You just go, but it makes sense. I get it. It definitely throws it into a different light now that I've never really kind of delved into. But yeah, it's a very good point you're making there. When you said there, you said there, you should discriminate to an extent. Elaborate for that. Elaborate on that for me, please, because that's, I think I know where you're going with that, and I probably agree. But for the audience, elaborate a little bit more on that one, please.
Yeah, we have certain people like to say don't stereotype. We all stereotype to a degree, right? Yeah. It doesn't mean that the stereotype is the be all and end all, but when you have limited information about where you are or who you're interacting with, you might stereotype. That's what it is.
And where do stereotypes come from? It's kind of like, do you think people just, I talk about this all the time on the show, and it's like, look, we have to, as humans that keep it real AF or keep it hunted, whatever the cool kids are saying these days, it's like, if we're going to acknowledge truthfulness and make that a trait that we display to the people, say, like, look how real and honest I am. So honest that you're probably going to hate me for my honesty. But to what you just said, like, stereotypes in a lot of cases are true. They are true. Right. Now, the problem is it's generalized. Does that slather of racial peanut butter cover the entirety of the bread? No. But for some reason, it covers a big chunk of it. And we cannot ignore these types of facts. In fact, there was a time in our our nation's comedy when you had comedians like Richard Pryor and the rest of them that would highlight these differences and make fun of it. And the reason they were so successful is because it was true. Because if it wasn't true, it would never be accepted. It's like, that's not funny, because it doesn't, it'd be like making a white joke, like making fun of like how good white people are at basketball. Nobody's going to laugh at that because they know it's not true. They'd laugh at the fact that it's not true. So versus like, why do we see such a heavy representation of blacks in the NBA versus any other color? And it's like, well, it's true. Why? Because blacks are just better at it. I don't know why. It just is what it is. So when we can't acknowledge these stereotypes, like, so we're living in this alternate reality that's like, we're living in times of bullshit is what people want. It's like, we're living in like the emperor has no clothes era. But again, I do want to caveat, this doesn't apply to all people. But when people say that stereotypes are bullshit, it's like, that's actually not true. Because then why did that stereotype even come to fruition or come into existence? It had to be pulled from this massive, category and say, how many times do we see this repeated across this demographic? It's like, well, there's a stereotype. Because, and I'll let you go on this one, but I was talking to Sheila, my fiance, yesterday about this. We have really good conversations about race because she's Mexican-Persian. And, you know, I do like hearing about her experiences because she was heavily discriminated against because of her mixed blood. But, you know, we were talking about how people stereotype and discriminate. And she was like, you know, well, I don't want to get into the conversation. But I said, the point that I wanted to add to your point was that when you get cut off in traffic and you're pulling up next to that person, what's the first thing you do?
I mean, you look at them.
Why? Why do you look at them? Why do you look at them, Adam? Because
you want to figure out what
sex they are and what race they are, because all you're going to do is going to go, oh, well, that just figures. So it could literally be a black Jew or a Chinese whatever. You'd be like, oh, well, that just figures because they're just stereotypically bad drivers. Like, that's not always true. But it's like we have this preconceived notion that we need to explain some type of horrible behavioral pattern or lack of attention or whatever, and then attribute it to this stereotype or a flaw in a specific race or sex. I mean, we already know women can't drive, so normally we think it's going to be a woman. So that's backed by data. I don't know if that's backed by data. I have no idea. I just like saying things that get people pissed off because it's fun.
But you know what's interesting about that? Men get higher insurance deductibles than women.
Yeah.
Yep. So I don't know how we square that one.
misandry, man. Misandry. I'm telling you, it's BS. Men are the real white heterosexual men. We're the real victims, Adam. Sorry, you're excluded from this. Although you are a token white because you're conservative or you're more centrist and black. So you're one of us. We got one, boys. We got us a black over here. Now we're not racist.
Oh, man. You know, the whole token thing is interesting too, because I don't know if token is a thing or if it's not a thing.
How so?
Like,
you're exploring these very just basic things. It's like, no, wait. They're not pulled over because they're black. They're pulled over because they're poor. You're like, wait, what? It's like, oh shit, that actually makes sense. That does make sense. Now you're like, well, you know, I'm gonna totally debunk this just Yeah, go ahead. Just busted all kinds of dreams out today. You're just ruining everything. Guess what? There's no Santa either.
Oh, there isn't? No.
it depends on if you're poor or not.
Yeah, that's right. Right. In the hood, they don't have chimneys.
I have never heard that. Why don't black kids get presents for Christmas? Because they don't have chimneys in the ghetto.
That's right.
That's great.
They don't have chimneys in trailers either.
That's true. That's actually true. Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah, that's a good point. That could apply to every race. Yeah.
Yeah. I was just imagining like Santa leaving a present underneath the trailer by the cinder blocks.
Oh my God. Yeah. Yep. You never see like a predominantly Chinese trailer park, do you? Or Asian one?
No, you don't.
Never.
Actually, now when you say Asian, do you mean Indian as well? Or do you think?
Like, no, I'm going to think, Chinese. Yeah, Japanese, Chinese, Korean. I'm going to exclude. I see what you're saying as well as Asian, but no. We're not smart on this show, Adam. Stop with the flexing. Okay. We get it. I wrote a book. You're smart. I'm sorry, folks. I'm sorry. He's just too smart. Anyway, go ahead and elaborate on the point you were trying to make, but dumb it down for us peasant folks, please.
Sure. So if you think about it, the whole token thing is never said by the person. Like no one's ever said, I'm a token. It's always accused that you are a token. No matter who it is. So someone could be a conservative and say that liberal person is a token, mm-hmm. and vice versa. But it's never of someone, like no one's ever walked around like, by the way, I'm the token black guy. Like no one says that. No one says it in a serious way.
Okay, either. Yeah. I was going to say, I have heard it used in like, you know, in comedic ways. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, right. Yeah. But you're saying that they don't actually have sincerity behind it. They're clearly making mockery of it. Okay.
Right, exactly. Okay. So that's why I'm like, is being a token a real thing? I don't know. It's almost like if you were to call someone a whore, well, what defines a whore? It's subjective. So
true.
I don't know.
You could kind of like definitely put a clarity on that. Interesting you use that topic too. You could definitely put clarity on that by saying, well, are they a paid prostitute? In which case they're a whore. Now, you're talking about though, as far as like body count, then it's like, right. Yeah, now of course it's subjective. Yeah. I get what you're saying there.
Yeah.
But token,
I don't know.
I would have to say there isn't, I don't think there is such thing as being token, because I think the only thing that separates you and me, as far as kind of like which political side we align ourselves on, it's just train of thought. It's perspective. Skin actually has nothing to do with it. You don't think a certain way. Well, I should put it this way. You shouldn't be thinking a certain way just because you're white, black, whatever. But also, if we're pragmatic about it, no, I disagree with that, because I feel like there are minorities that are forced to think a certain way due to the circumstances they're facing at a very young age, whatever the case. But I would say in the spirit of universal truth, I believe that you are truthful. I believe the things that you say are truthful. They're honest. And that's where I aim to go. So my political aim is to go to where truth is. So I think if it's universal, then regardless of background, we can all at least acknowledge that that should be the direction we're heading. Now, I guess the tokenism is, or I like I say, I don't believe it exists, but it's just kind of like achieving that truth, understanding that universal truth and accepting things based upon data and things like that. If you want to call that like getting awake or having your whatever you want to call it. But so when you say token, I kind of always think like that black guy thinks like a white guy. So he's our token black. It's like, but then that just means that what all whites think differently than blacks. Like that doesn't make sense. Like philosophically, it doesn't make sense.
Yes. And that's actually another good point to kind of bring up. I think the only way something, I don't even know if that's a token thing. I think what ends up happening is, why someone accuses you of being a token, it's not always that you're the outlier, right? Like 98 of the 100 say one thing and the two people say something different.
Race traitor, like, though? Isn't that kind of like the context of it? Like you're a token, like you don't think like us, you think like a token.
Yes.
Am I wrong on that?
It could be that, but I've heard the other way. I'll give you an example.
Okay.
I've heard black conservatives say that about certain black liberals. Now, clearly, the black liberals outnumber the black conservatives, but they're what they're talking about is their behavior, right? And I think usually what it comes down to is you're being accused of not being authentic in some way. So, like, you're just saying that because it appeases somebody else, or you're just saying that, you know, not because that's how you truly feel.
Right,
but because
you're just trying to fit in.
Right, whether you're trying to fit in or it makes you money or gives you notoriety, whatever it might be. Okay. But I don't know. I know we just went down this path of just one word, but
it's always
fascinating.
You know, I my understanding of what token meant was like the singular, kind of like we've got ourselves a token black guy in this group of whites, or, you know, one white dude in a group of blacks, whatever you call it, it's like our token. So it's just kind of like our guy from the other class. But I see what you're saying there as far as like that's the outlier. And I see what you're saying. Makes sense. Makes a lot of sense. Yeah. Do you write about stuff like this in that book?
It's been a while. Was it as far as token, not specifically token, but
I mean, as far as like how you break these things down to the level that you've already done. So there's a lot of this in your book.
Yes.
Oh, that sounds interesting.
I forgot the title of the chapter, but there's a chapter where I talk about how black conservatives are mistreated. Mm-hmm. And not to say, I wrote it in a way where it's not to say that they're right, but what I'm talking about is fairness, right? To presume that they don't believe what they believe. And it's also the only group that I've ever seen where publicly you can call them the N-word. You can smear them.
Yeah.
You can use racial attacks towards them on television, never lose your job, and everybody's cool with it. Mm. Right? And something is wrong with that. So,
well, you know, from the guess what? Blacks got to move over because now the Jews are in town and they're getting all the heat right now. Blacks are like, man, I want the discrimination back. And it's like, nope, the Jews are getting it now, man. It went from like blacks to whites. Now it's the Jews. It's like, whew. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I totally derailed that. It's a sad thing to see, though, quite honestly, what's going on in the state of the world. But anyway, what you were talking about as far as within the book itself, how you break these things these types of things down and you elaborate on them. Yeah. You said this one chapter. Do you feel you brought up the question that as a black, would I call you a conservative?
That's a good question.
Yeah, I know we can go very in depth on that.
I don't think I've actually called myself a black conservative.
Okay. Well, I've never questioned you on whether or not you actually believe the things you say just based upon your skin color. I sincerely feel that you do believe the things. I don't think there's a black person out there, barring, say, maybe Candace Owens, who's currently in the news, that has said things they don't authentically mean, or saying it for the sake of just, you know, attention seeking or wanting to fit in. I you know, like Rob Smith's a black conservative. I think he's authentic in his beliefs. I disagree with him on a lot of them, so I think he definitely has to be authentic in them. So, yeah, but does that happen a lot, do you feel? Yeah.
Does that happen a lot as far as black people who say things that they don't actually believe?
Yeah.
It's tricky because it's almost like you're judging someone's heart, but how do you do that? Unless, like, you're behind the scenes, unless you kind of hear them say one thing publicly and then privately say something else, it's really hard to know. You can presume, right? And maybe your presumption might be safe to presume, especially if they say one thing one day and then say the opposite thing the other day, or, you know, or if they have a particular strategy of creating outrage and stuff like that. They're just saying whatever.
That's like Bill Mitchell. If you're on Twitter, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Watching that, I will tell you what, man, I don't even think race applies anymore politically. I have never seen so many people playing jump rope with political aisles. They're just kind of like DeSantis, Trump, Biden, RFK. Like, dude, it's getting to the point where I don't, like, a lot of these big names, like, I don't even know where they're at anymore. It's like this world, this election cycle has thrown things into just such disarray that's like, I don't even know where the political, it's like a spider web where the political lines are. For like to get to C, you got to go through A and then over here to B. It's like, it's insane, dude. It's insane.
And the thing about it is, it doesn't matter all that much.
Yeah.
Like, it matters to an extent. Obviously, who becomes president matters to some extent. But man, they put way more emphasis into a man or a woman who might become president. Well, at this point, a man. But a man who might become president.
Right.
And not into their life and mm-hmm. how they treat each other and how they are excelling in their career and so on and so forth. Like, there isn't that much that the president has a direct effect in most people's lives.
Right.
He has some sort of effect. Like, the president is a spokesman for the country. Mm-hmm. And that has some sort of impact for us. There are things that do apply as far as the importance of the president. But from my perspective, it almost doesn't matter. Like, I'm just speaking selfishly.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think congressional elections have way more impact on this country, community elections, yeah. things such as that. And I don't think people understand that to the level of what you're describing, because you're right. The president doesn't make laws. He can bless off, he can veto, he can do whatever he wants. So I think when people get more, and I think I have seen a shift specifically on Twitter, and I know Twitter is not real life, but you do see a lot of where that's where the politicians are and where they're tweeting. I do see more and more people getting involved in the congressional runoffs, which is 100% what we need. So yeah, if we put it on, like, if we had Biden, but we had a Republican Congress, nothing's happening, which could be a good thing, quite honestly. So I agree with you. I agree.
Yeah. And even I think COVID lockdowns and how everything happened with that shitstorm. I think that's a perfect example as to why local elections. And when I say local, we can just go to state.
Okay, right? Yeah.
Why state politics is really important, because even for me living in New Jersey, things weren't rosy. Right. It wasn't Florida. Right. Which was trying to get back as quick as possible. But New Jersey is a more mixed state than people actually understand.
Mm-hmm. It was close to flipping red.
Yeah.
I think that was like 2020, wasn't it?
For the governor.
That's right. The gubernatorial. That's right. Yes.
The governor almost lost to a guy who's running a Republican Party that I didn't even know who this guy was.
Yeah, man. When I saw that happening, because I used to be in New Jersey all the time in my summers, I was like, the fact that New Jersey almost flipped, it's like, dude, that's insane, because that's right by New York. You're like, holy crap. Yeah. So it's, yeah.
But legislatively, they were Republican.
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing that people don't realize.
Classic liberal, so, yeah.
You know, so that's the, but here's the thing. Even though we weren't Florida, we got back a lot faster. We got back to normal a lot faster than if I crossed over the Hudson into New York, mm-hmm. which was still dystopia.
Yeah.
Right. And that's because there was so much political pressure against Governor Murphy that it got to a point where he's like, all right, fine, we're opening up. Yeah. And when they opened up, they didn't do the, well, we're opening up for now and see. No, this is it.
Yeah.
We were open. No more masks. No one gave a shit anymore. We were good. And then no phases. You could take the train into Manhattan, and it's complete dystopia, like it's day one of the pandemic. And to me, that's like state elections really, really matter. Hell, even DeSantis, if he lost at his first election, God only knows what would happen to Florida.
Oh, my God. Yeah. So, I wish I could have said Abbott was, you know, similar. It just, it felt like whatever DeSantis was doing, Abbott was like about a month behind him on that one. And it's kind of like, dude, lead the way. Texas should be leading the way in freedom, and we're not. And it's a damn disgrace. Yeah. Abbott has been a very big disappointment where it really matters, specifically the border, COVID. Very disappointed. Very disappointed.
Yeah. But you know what? I try to think of like the positives. At least he was a month behind and not a year behind.
Yeah, true. Yeah, you're not wrong, dude. It's seeing the good stuff. You're absolutely. Yeah. I think one of the biggest letdowns of this upcoming election is the fact that I'll say right off the bat, RFK doesn't have a chance. He's going to pull votes from Biden. That's why he ran independent. There was no way the DNC was going to go for that guy. So plus Biden being the incumbent. But and RFK is the only one up there on that stage that I saw any semblance of COVID accountability coming from. We won't get it from Biden and we won't get it from Trump. Both of them pushed the vax very heavily. So COVID accountability for the next 5 years, it's not coming. I hate to be the bearer of bad news, folks, but that's what we do on this show. We got to be truthful. The COVID account of Fauci, he'll probably be dead before any accountability comes. And it's a damn shame. That is a damn shame. That's what identity politics and tribalism does to us.
I think a perfect example was before the election, Joe Biden went into office. I think it was like a month or two before. During the debates, they said, I think Kamala Harris and Joe Biden said, I would not take the vaccine.
Yeah. Yep.
Right. Because Trump was the one who was pushing it. Yeah. And then as soon as he got into office, I think it was like a couple weeks in, they said, get the vaccine.
The same rollout, the same people literally just pulled the Trump off it and slapped Biden. I was like, oh, now it's good. You know there's uniparty. That's when you know there's like, and here's the deal, man. Like I've said it before, I get why, you know, our politicians were in such, you know, they felt such pressure from society saying, okay, we've got this thing, fix us, cure us, give us something. And unfortunately, as a politician, you can't go to the people and be like, okay, but it's going to take a couple years. People don't want to hear that. They want instant gratification. We live in the age of Amazon Prime, Adam. So if you go to people and say, hey, there is this disease, this virus, if you will, that's in China. And oh, by the way, it's got a massive kill rate while CNN is spreading so much propaganda and fear porn, people just dropping dead in the streets left and right. So what do you expect politicians to do? They're going to say, okay, we're going to come to the rescue and here's what we're going to do. And that's what I told people from the get-go was like, look, you can just go look this up. Clinical trials for normal vaccines go from anywhere for 5 to 10 years. We had none of this. So that's why I was just kind of like, freedom to choose, baby. It's like, it's your freedom to choose. If you want to take it, be the guinea pig. I don't care. If you don't, that's fine, medical. But that's what made me really upset with our current electors or our current representatives. Nobody, Adam, not a single person stood for the idea of constitutional freedom of saying, if you are sick, stay home. But we cannot crash this economy because of this virus we know virtually nothing about. That's what really aggravated me the most. And Fauci got away with so much murder.
Well, actually, I disagree a little bit about what you said. The line as far as the virus that we didn't know much about, we actually did know based off of it being in Italy. There was a lot of information even.
Before it hit America.
Yeah. And that's the thing for me. Not too long ago, I went to Italy and I was having a conversation with someone there and we were talking about this very thing. And I've actually talked to other people from different countries and they asked like, when did you know that this is bullshit and that this wasn't going to be as some crazy virus that's going to
Spanish flu. You know,
wipe out 10% of the population. And I said, when it hit Italy, like that's when I knew that, oh, this is extremely detrimental for people who are already sick, who are very unhealthy and old. And the reason why it had a high impact in Italy, because it has one of the oldest populations in the world. Mm-hmm. So that is why it affected them. And it might make sense to lock them down in a certain extent in Italy, although I wouldn't advocate for them to just arbitrarily lock down, they should have done something more common sense oriented. But that we saw that. We knew exactly who was targeting. That information was out there before we even locked down in the States. It's just that we just wanted to pretend that didn't exist and just go for this arbitrary lockdown so everybody can prove that they're doing something. I'm stronger on COVID. No, I'm stronger on COVID. I'm the strongest.
What a weird flex. What a weird flex. I'm the most unconstitutional person, but then in America, internationally, what do they care?
Right. COVID won't know what hit it. I'll lock you down, guys. I'll lock you guys harder than my opponent here. No. I want stricter.
You know, I don't think that I ever thought, I know I do. You know, I don't think COVID is bullshit. I think it's real. 100%. I mean, of course it's proven to be real. But do I think it's as deadly as they made it out to be? No, I don't. But we also didn't know the demographics that thing hits the hardest. Now we do. But for me, though, it was like we chose option A, which was to shut the economy down. And now I kind of feel like we're trying to get the warp reactor back up and running, but it's not coming up. So now we got like no economic powerhouse, if you will. So it's like everything that we're facing economically, be it Republicans, Democrats, there are still a lot of things that we're going to be paying for quite some time. We had so much fraud from the PPP loans. We've seen such drastic inflation. It's like, this is not something that a singular president is going to fix right away. It's going to take some time. And this, unfortunately, is the consequences of doing choice A. We shut the country down. Now you, the people, are going to be taxed out of your ass. And this is what you get. And oh, by the way, guess what? Large-scale corporations the left hates so much because of all that greedy capitalism, they just got like juiced. They got steroided out of their mind. And now they have such a bigger, they were trillions in profits. Mom and pop businesses going away. There goes the demographic that's going to challenge them economically. And here we are. And yet people are just kind of like, well, you know, screw COVID accountability. I care more about whatever.
Yeah. I mean, I actually wrote an article for Epic Times, and admittedly, it would never happen. But it's called "The Need for COVID Reparations."
Oh my god! Oh my god! That would just be locking up all politicians. Just like unless you stood for keeping your state or whatever open, lock them up. Like, there's your reparations. And I think we'd all be happy. Well, in all seriousness, we lost thousands upon thousands of businesses, hundreds of thousands of businesses gone. And as a small business owner myself, it's such a blow. You know, you invest so much of your sweat equity and working very hard, taking on a lot of stress just for somebody to come in and say, oh, by the way, we're shutting you down because we don't know what we're up against here. But in the meantime, what you've worked to build, that's going to be sacrificed. And oh, by the way, if we're wrong, you don't get a handout. You're still done.
Right. I mean, let's say you wanted the lockdowns to happen. You're like, you know what? There's too much mystery. Let's lock down.
Right.
But even the way they were attempting to do it didn't make sense.
Yes,
when
I
you
agree.
Say we're going to lock you guys down. So, all right, what's the reason? So you don't spread it. You don't get close to each other. Okay. But Walmart can be open without any sort of restrictions. Target can be open without restrictions. All those Amazon workers can go in there indiscriminately without restrictions. They can work from the very beginning on. Yep. The grocery store, everybody can go in there. So the big boxes,
it wasn't really a lockdown.
Right. It wasn't really a lockdown. The big box chains, all of them were literally hundreds of people can be in at the same time, they were fine. No, nothing to worry about.
Yeah.
Especially when you lock everything else down. These are the only places that you can go and everything is perfectly fine. That's okay. But let someone have a little boutique store. Let someone have a
That's
gym.
The real danger, Adam. That's where you're going to get COVID. That's killing grandmas. What's wrong with you? You're kidding
like,
me? Yeah,
literally. Yeah. And I'm in New Jersey. I can't remember where in Jersey it is, but the guy had to fight with the state to open up his gym, the very place where people should be going to get healthy so they can combat, you know, a virus, you know, the thought. But like, that's the person that we go after. And I think that's for
me. We are so backwards.
Yeah. It doesn't make any...
You're attacking the wrong... Friendly fire. Friendly fire. Stop. These are the patriots. You should be supporting these people. And turns out we were right. Hey, don't be fat. Don't be lazy. Don't eat like shit. Go work out. Be healthy. Because who did it kill? You know, Adam, it's funny because I did that video back in 2015. It was like a super viral. It was a fat shaming video. And it's what garnished me my massive following. And I was like, fat people, I'm sorry. I find you repulsive and disgusting. It's like, I never want to be like you. It's like, I see parents that are fat and I look for those children right behind them just as fat. It's like, it is not a healthy, bad way to be. It went super viral, dude. It pissed so many people off. And that's what pulled me into the political aspect because it was only liberals that were like, oh, he's fat shaming. But anyway, I made that video in 2015. I said, there is nothing positive. There is nothing good about being fat. Now, I understand there are things that come into play. Hypothyroidism, I understand that. I get that. But when you've got actual type 1 diabetes in America that is in single digit percentile and all of these supposed conditions that make you inept from apparently the, you know, being a caloric deficit and the laws of thermodynamics, I guess it exempts you from that. And some of them actually do, but not all of them.
Yeah.
But when you say, why is it that by 2030, and this is pre-COVID, we're going to be at a 75% obesity rate. Now, post-COVID, we've blown past that because all people did was stay at home and fed themselves junk food. So yeah. Along comes COVID, and who does it impact the most? Who does it take out the most? The elderly and the obese. So the asshole that people hated for the longest, oh, he's fat shaming. I was preaching the gospel. I was John the Baptist, the asshole version of it. God forgive me. I was crying in the wilderness, oh, ye of massive body weight, lose it and be saved. And you didn't listen. They didn't listen, Adam.
You know what I was just thinking about? How many 70-year-old obese people do you know?
Yeah, that's actually a really good point. None.
I don't think I know any.
Yeah.
And I think that's the point.
Yeah.
Like that kills people.
Yeah.
Like your choices, how you live your life, it kills you.
Yeah.
You know, whether you're consuming food or consuming alcohol, whatever, if you're doing it into excess, ultimately that's going to wear out your body and it's going to kill you soon.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I think the fat acceptance, actually, I'm sort of serious when I say this, but I'm sort of not. So take it or leave it. But I think part of the fat acceptance movement is a skinny woman psyop.
It's taking like, out the competition. Say, yes, we'll be the only skinny ones at the party. Get them all fat. That's
No.
That's you twisted, look great, Adam. Becky.
All the guys are going to love you.
Oh my God. I could see that being true. I could. There are some very vindictive women. I could totally see that being true.
Yeah.
Just eliminate the competition.
It's always like the ones who say who believe in fat acceptance, they're always left leaning, right?
Oh,
but
yeah.
You always see them. Granted, you might see like one or two fat girls who are like, yeah, I'm for it. And this is their friend circle. But it's always like the skinny girls who are around them. Who are like co-signing it. And I always thought that's weird. Like, why would you co-sign if you think it's good no matter what, how come you're not fat? And it's like,
Yeah. So cause I need the ugly fat one to be my wingman. So that way when dudes walk up, it's like, oh God, no, and I get more attractive by association.
Right.
Makes sense.
If being
that's some twisted logic though. That's some twisted logic. It's true, though. I agree with this.
I mean, like, if you think about it like this, if being fat is exactly the same as being skinny, then why isn't everyone fat? Because you get to eat whatever you want all the time, and you have no difference whatsoever health-wise. Why aren't we all fat? And so that's why I'm like, I don't believe them when they say that it's just as healthy as a skinny person. You can't tell how healthy someone
the data does not support that. They know it doesn't support it. That's because progressives are so emotionally driven because everything's about the feelings. Now, I'm not being facetious. I'm being serious when I say this. They are very, very about the feelings. And I understand, like, trust me, I get it, that it would be nice to live in a society where everybody is respectful, where everybody, you know, stays in their lane. Everybody is helpful. We call these white communities. So now, I was going to throw it in there. I wish we could live in a society where everybody minded their P's and Q's. We held the door. Yes, sir. No, ma'am. Whatever. But unfortunately, that's not the reality that we face. So we must then, you know, just have to accept the human condition for what it is. So when you see people out there saying that we should be worried about feelings, look, that's going to get you killed. That's not going to, life does not operate that way. So when you try and tell these liberals on these college campuses, like, I wish it could exist in this utopia that your professors, who, by the way, can't be successful because they're here teaching you, they can't do anything in the real life. Say, but I wish it could be this utopia that they have you believe could exist. It's like, but show me where in this world you have that. Doesn't exist. So rather than, you know, just accept things for as they are, it's like, we're going to go out and change the world. It's like, no, you're not. No, you're not. It's like, this is how the world is. You're not changing it. So you have to adapt. It's like I said, you're not going to remove bullies, but you can make yourself bully-proof.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I was actually, by the way, Tamika Hamilton says hello.
Oh, what's up? Yeah. Tamika, I talked to her on Instagram.
Yeah. We were actually having a conversation sort of about like the idea of change. Mm-hmm. And what I was saying was like, I think a lot of people, especially leftists, they presume that change is something that happens quickly. And when there's so many different hands that are involved, and like you could pick an issue and there's an opposition to it. Like for me and you, it's common sense. Like, I don't know, you don't sexualize children. Yet there are people out there who are like, well, actually some children.
I can totally see a leftist doing this. Like, well, you know, they dress in a certain way. Little sluts have it coming. Like, what is wrong with you? Oh, yeah.
Some infants masturbate. Like, who are you?
No. And you know what's sad is that sounds totally like something they would do. It's like, you know, the whole idea of like, we shouldn't assign gender at birth. It's like, are you retarded? Like, you are retarded. Like, you seriously have to be. There's no other way that would explain your train of thought. Your method of thinking does not exist. It's not real world. Like, your shit is just, it's insane. Because we want to enable these disorders because of feelings, Adam. Because of feelings. You can't tell a trans person, hey, you need to get help. This is not, no, it's like, oh no, we should accept them. It's like, that's a disorder. I'm sorry. If the social norm and the physical norms that are backed by DNA say, if you have a penis, you're the male species, why is it that that's the only thing that applies to is the human species? It doesn't apply to any other species out there. Mm-hmm. Just us, Adam. Did you know that?
Well, I guess we're the only ones who have girl cock, so.
Good luck tonight when you're trying to sleep and not think of that. Did you see that viral tweet about the, No. This is the problem when you get somebody else on Twitter on one of these shows. It's like, dude, we're going to discuss the things that we shouldn't be talking about because it's disgusting. Yeah. It's disgusting. When you see a girl cock, you should bend over to be bred and like, oh my God. So what you're saying is you should let the dude impregnate the women. You're just using extra steps. That's all you're saying. So essentially, let the guy rape you. Isn't that beautiful for how the patriarchy has been reestablished? So the viral tweet was from some Reddit, which is the first thing right there because it's, the loser class. And they go over there on Reddit and they're talking about like, people shouldn't question girl cocks. Instead, you should just bend over and take it and let it impregnate you because you're helping out the trans community. It's like, so you should let a dude rape you if you're, that doesn't make sense.
Yeah. Well, we veered off a little bit.
We really have. We really have.
The point I was trying to make is that even with something that seems so common sense, like you don't sexualize children, there's an opposition to it. There's a lobbying effort against that narrative. Mm-hmm. And so for no matter what we want to do, especially if it's a big idea, especially if it's a big cultural thing, right? It's not a policy. It's how we see the world. It's our culture. Like there's so much pushback against it that it's painstakingly slow for change to happen.
Yeah.
And that in many ways, it's kind of a good thing. Sometimes it's kind of a good thing that's the case, but that's the reality of change. And I think that there are young people who presume that, yeah, we just have to do this one thing and then everything is good. But like, if you're someone who wants to free Palestine, well, all right, so I'm going to go out there and protest and then change will happen, right?
Yeah.
Right? Is that how it works? Maybe if I protest for a whole year, then Palestine would be free. It's like, no. Even if I want, how would we have that happen? And is there an opposition to whatever you're advocating for? Yes, there's an opposition to it. There's opposition for everything. So I just think that we oversimplify change.
I agree. And I think, it just goes back to the point we were just discussing is that say like we had another era of Trump. I still don't think the economy would be recovered any more than, well, I will say Joe Biden was probably adding gasoline to the fire. So I will advocate for that. I think it'd be a lot less impactful, but regardless, like you just said, though, there's no getting away from it. Like it makes perfect sense.
Actually, being that you brought up Trump, I don't know if a lot of people think of it like this. Trump is going to be a lame duck president.
Yeah, no.
And so, all right, for people who've been following politics longer than 4 years, we understand that the power of being the president for two terms is that you have a second term, right? And so what's supposed to happen is that first term is like your power play, right? And that's where you line things up. So when the second term comes in, you implement certain things. Yeah. But if you only have one term, and then it gets hijacked, and then you come in and you just have one more term, then they'll just say, we don't need to work with you. Yep. Because you'll be gone in a few years, and re-election's coming right around, and somebody else is going to be picked.
Yep.
So I don't know if a lot of people realize that even if Trump wins, I don't even know if I guess Congress quite possibly could turn Democrat.
Oh, yeah.
And so
I think they're actually forecasting it.
Yeah. And so nothing's going to happen.
No.
And honestly, even if it were, let's say, Republican leaning, there's different factions within the Republican Party.
Oh, clearly we've seen that. Yeah. From like the likes of Mike Johnson, and the rest of them. Absolutely.
Right. So there's a fracture there that already exists. So the idea that Trump gets into office, and let's say we got a Republican Senate and a Republican Congress, they're just going to start pushing things through. And I've seen Democrat president when Obama first got into office, all three branches were Democrat. And guess what they did? Dick.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, right.
Right.
But now the question, though, Adam,
they'll just push everything through.
But the question is now, I kind of feel like more and more, I mean, would you say from the Obama era up until now, do you feel like more people are getting involved in this nation's political world? Do you think, or at least paying attention more so?
Yes.
So with that being said, then I think more expectation and more demand is going to be being placed on our elected representatives to actually start doing more, whether it be individually or collectively. So I think we're going to start, and it's kind of scary and troubling because I'm kind of shooting myself in the foot here. This sword swings two ways. This could be beneficial if we have, like you just described, a conservative Congress, and, you know, because we already have a pretty much, I would say, conservative SCOTUS, but I think it's kind of centrist right now. It's very hard to say sometimes, but I've been surprised and shocked, but happily impressed. But I really feel, though, like if we have a full conservative everything, the trifecta, I think they're going to do a lot. Because much is expected now. Much is expected, specifically the border. Like, they're going to have to push through a lot of stuff because, you know, I don't think the American people would tolerate it. I really feel like it's going to be one of those things that it'd be like how they talked about how if the GOP continues going the way it's going, it's time to leave the GOP because it's lost its way. It's been infected with so much progressivism, whatever you want to call it, the Uniparty, more Republicans, you know, bending the knee to Democrats. Like, you rarely, outside of Joe Manchin and Kristen Sinema, you don't see Democrats really crossing the aisle that much to work with Republicans, but you will definitely see the likes of McCarthy, Johnson, the rest of them working hand in hand with the likes of Schumer and Pelosi. So it's kind of like we're getting tired of constantly being dragged across the aisle. We get nothing for it.
Yeah, I can understand that. I think more people are paying attention to politics, but more people were paying attention to politics when Trump got into office.
Yeah, I agree, yeah.
Now that he's not in office, I feel like the temperature has gone down and he's no longer the focal point. Although they're trying to make him the focal point
by,
you know, lawsuits and stuff like that.
Who would you say is the focal point, Biden?
I guess what I'm getting at is there are people who are on the fence as far as giving a shit about politics and not. And so they cared more because it's like, man, this is crazy. Trump's the president.
Right.
But when he's not the president anymore, they just kind of move on to other things.
Right. Yeah.
So that's what I mean. Like there are people who are kind of on the fence of sort of being interested and sort of not. Mm. But the focal point, if you are paying attention to politics, I think the focal point is Trump. Okay. Because he does have these lawsuits. They are bringing him into court. They're making it much more about Trump.
Oh, yeah. There's no denying
Biden.
That, yeah.
So I think that's their strategy. Strategically, like if I was Joe Biden, I would do the same thing. Mm. So, you know, it makes sense as to why they're trying to make him the focal point, just like that. honestly, that's how they won last time. Nobody was voting for Biden. They're voting against Trump. Okay,
dude, I'm so glad to hear you say that. I have tried to rationalize this with so many people when it came to, do you really think Joe Biden got that many votes? Like, look, there's something that a lot of conservatives, and this is very, this is a bad thing, by the way. There is something a lot of conservatives are not taking into account, and that is the level of vitriol that the left had for Trump and for you. They were united. You think love unites? Fuck no, it doesn't. Hate unites. Wars have been fought on a unification of hate. So when you say, people say, you think Biden got those? No, I think people didn't want Trump. I think because they painted, I mean, you got to remember for the 4 years, my God, Adam, there were protests like Trump's a Nazi, Trump's a xenophobe. They were slandering this. And I'm not a big Trump guy, but we can all acknowledge that they were painting this guy as the love child of Hitler and Mussolini. It was the Antichrist with a spray tan. You're like, Jesus. It's like the actual TDS was on full display. So when the 2020 election came, I kept telling people, like, you better not underestimate the left and their hatred of Donald Trump because of the propaganda the MSM has been peddling for the last 4 years. This was a buildup. And so here we are. And it's like, guys, I'm saying it again. Do not underestimate the level of hatred the left has for Trump. But to Trump's advantage, Biden has done a horrible job for the last 4 years. I think a lot of Democrats are getting fed up with it. They're like, okay, you know what? When you see someone like Michael Rapaport coming out there and now saying he's voting Trump, you know things are bad.
So, and there's another option. So we mentioned Biden, Trump, and you have brought up RFK Jr., but there's another option, and that's the option to stay home. Yeah. And people don't like when I say this, but this is true. They're like, no, you should go out there. You need to do your duty. People don't think like that. Like, voter apathy is a real thing.
Yeah.
And when people look at registered voters, right, and the percentage of actually registered voters and what percentage of them actually go out and vote.
It's pathetic. It's pathetic, Adam. It's sad.
And that's because people feel like it doesn't matter.
Yeah, 100%.
And so now you have Trump, who lost, and he lost for a reason. People want to argue about whatever. But let's say he lost 100% legitimate. He lost for a reason, which means he's not as favorable. Then you have a bad president of Joe Biden, who's not as favorable even amongst Democrats. Mm-hmm. And you have people who aren't into politics like that who are on the fence. Yeah. And they're like, we get this crazy Trump guy, or do we get Biden? You know what? F it. I'm just staying home.
Yeah.
And that's a real thing. And I don't think people fully understand that you lose people when you have a bad candidate.
Yeah.
And they just won't get involved. And when you have two bad candidates, and basically a re-election of two not very favorable candidates not from a Republican perspective, but from a perspective of an average American who is moderate, who could take politics or leave it, why are they going to get up, go down to the local election office and choose either one of these guys? Mm-hmm. It doesn't even matter. My state does this. You know, they'll say whatever and they'll just stay home.
Yeah.
They don't care. And because voter apathy is a very, very real thing, because politics doesn't change all that much.
Yeah.
I agree. You know, when you feel like you're not being represented and then you get every other year, Republican, Democrat, and nothing changes and things get worse, then it's kind of like, what's the point of voting?
Adam, I wish to God. Look, I have my beefs with Ron DeSantis. There are some things I disagree with him on. Mm-hmm. But I really felt if we would have nominated Ron, if we would have had, and again, I am not a loyalist. I will say, you know, I've disagreed with DeSantis on a few different things. Like, I don't agree with him on this one. But I feel like Ron DeSantis would have definitely united the GOP. Trump is facing a lot of lawfare, which I agree is BS. I think it's ridiculous. I was like, but I think DeSantis could have united people. And that I kind of feel like would have been its own battle to get MAGA to come over to support Ron. I think that if Trump would have said, yeah, go do it. He's the greatest Florida congressman. Let's just do it. Let's vote for Ron DeSantis. They would have done it. But the thing that I felt was more important than that was that in the aftermath of 4 years of just economic disaster, moderate Democrats, that sliver of fat on the left, that if you can get them and the independents to come over to your side, if the if the economic conditions have been met and the cultural conditions have been inflated to such an insane level of transing the kids, trying to normalize pedophilia, child-based drag shows, you have got the perfect conditions to sweep the nation in a red tidal wave. And we blew it. We blew it. So now it's going to be an uphill fight because now Democrats are torn. That's why I say I think RFK is going to pull more votes than Trump would pull moderate Democrats. I really do. RFK is going to screw Trump hard on this one.
Yeah. I mean, you could be right about that. I don't have a point to disagree about the assessment about RFK. I do think that the interesting thing about Trump, so I mentioned that he'll be a lame duck president, but it's not just he'll be a lame duck president, is that the reason why he still has influence is because there is the possibility of him getting back into office.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But if he loses again, that's it.
That's it, yeah.
That's it. But here's the other thing. Even if he wins, he's going to be a lame duck president, and everything that's going to happen in the Republican Party is going to be about lining up in a post-Trump era.
100%.
Now, for some people, that's a good thing. Certain people, that's a bad thing. But here's the part that I find interesting, and I give Trump kudos for. Trump made the Republican Party an open tent party, right?
Yeah.
He said, what do you have to lose? Come and join us. And a lot of people who are in the Republican Party, who are part of the Republican base, do not like that, haven't liked that. They swallow their tongue. They support Trump because he's the man in power. Yeah. However, when the ringleader leaves the circus, what's going to happen? Someone else is going to try to take control. And so the big tent Republican Party that was created through Trump, I think is under threat as far as disappearing and going back to the Republican Party that I didn't like from years ago, that was stuffy, basically country club Republicans mixed in with the evangelicals who think that God created the Constitution and all this other bullshit and want to mix in Christianity into politics.
Christian nationalism. Yeah.
Right.
Which goes in direct violation of what our founding fathers, it's what we created America for. I mean, my God, we're trying to Puritans. I agree.
Right. And I think that, to me, we're already hearing statements like, if you're a Christian, you wouldn't vote Democrat. That statements like that bother me.
Yeah.
I wouldn't like it if you said Democrat or Republican because you're voting for someone's faith.
Yeah.
You know, to get some sort of political outcome that favors you.
Yep.
And that's a manipulation, and I don't like that. Same. And I say that as someone who's a Christian. Yeah. So, you know, I see that is the next venture. Whether he wins or loses, we're starting to see people jousting for positions of power within the Republican Party. Yeah. So I'm putting that out there.
Oh, no, I agree.
Start seeing people acting weird.
Mm-hmm. Bro, it's no different than back in the olden days, the Renaissance period, when the king was sick, and then you start seeing people trying to, amongst themselves, who's going to be next. It's political royalty in a sense, and that's why you see politicians like Matt Gaetz getting all jumpity. You see Marjorie Taylor Greene's, Lauren Boebert's giving hand over the pants handies, and you know, just she's doing her own way of TMZ version, I guess. You're not wrong, dude. You're not wrong. Who is going to be the next face of the Republican Party? And after Donald Trump, those are some big shoes to fill, because Trump has a massive, craterous impact in the GOP. He does. There's no denying it. Even if I don't want to vote for the guy, I can at least acknowledge, like, yeah, he's massive in the GOP. But I think we're starting to see a shift. The big tent party, I think people are finally starting to wake up and say, this is not a good thing. Because in that big tent, now you've got trans influencers that are now quote unquote conservatives. You have drag queens that are conservatives. You've opened it up to a lot of the degeneracy that you said, these are not conservative values. These are things we do not agree with. So it's kind of like, will the GOP shift back to that era of the Grand Old Party, or will it take a more progressive approach, saying culturally, like I would say more of a libertarian approach, live and let live, don't go after the kids, and you do what you want to do, but you shouldn't have any favors, and we shouldn't pay for anything. If I feel like if the GOP could take that approach, it'd be 10 times more successful.
So what's interesting thing is the word conservative, because conservative means different things to different people.
Yeah, that's true.
For some people, it's just fiscally conservative. Some people, it's socially conservative. And everybody looks at how they think the GOP should be and think that millions upon millions of people should think exactly how they think when it comes to the party. When in reality, the GOP has one job, to win elections. That's it. To get as many people to vote for their party so they can win elections. It's to support candidates across the country so they win elections. Mm-hmm. That is their only job. And so if they're not able to do that job, then they're not succeeding as a party. Yep. Now, the question becomes, how do you get those votes? What do you have to do to get those votes? And for me, I'm just speaking as I'm not a Republican. Mm. So I'm just speaking very analytically. To me, if the goal is to get more votes than the other party, then you do whatever is possible that doesn't completely, well, assuming that you have some sort of standard, right? And there's some sort of, I think every party has some sort of party ambitions of some sort, like this is what we stand for, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know,
some foundational beliefs.
Yeah, foundational beliefs. It's usually something vague.
And
I think it's purposely vague. As long as you're not violating that completely, then what's the harm in getting different people for different things? What's the harm of attracting people who look like me? What's the harm of getting somebody who has the same exact values as far as political values, but they sleep with the same sex, right? They move the same exact way, except it's in the bedroom. They, you know, it's another guy screwing another guy. Mm-hmm. Like, what's, to me, is the goal to play social referee through politics, or is the goal to win elections so you can have a bigger impact? So who cares? Like, this is just me speaking. Who cares if you get some gay people who agree with your stance, who aren't trying to change your party? Mm-hmm. They're saying, we agree with your politics. That's why we like your party, right? They're not trying to get you to do anything else. They just want, hey, we're here and we support what you're doing. And for someone to come around and say, we'll take all votes except for theirs, to me, doesn't make a whole lot of sense if the objective is to win elections.
Yeah, you're being very vague there, because if your objective is to win elections, then I have to go back to the but at what cost? If it's at the cost that the party that you were trying to win for is no longer economically or socially or culturally recognizable, then what have you really won? You've compromised everything. So I get where you're coming from. I don't deny that's what they do. I 100% agree. It's all about winning elections. And it just seems like we're going to say anything that we have to say, do anything we have to do to win. But then when you see these same politicians doing this, it's like, then why are you running as a conservative? It's because you're not. And that's right. And they're certainly not going to run as an independent libertarian, because they never get any votes.
Yeah. Well, libertarians don't win.
Exactly.
Anything, so,
well, they won in Argentina, but it was also because socialism has just really failed over there. Really failed.
But I do think that's why I say, someone's probably watching this and like, what is he talking about? Like, just do anything. What I'm saying is that the Republican Party has some sort of standard. They all have some sort of standard. And in that standard, they don't say except being gay. Mm. Right. So as long as, hey, if you vote for our party, this is what we're trying to pursue.
Yeah.
And you happen to be gay and you support that, then cool. Then that's fine. So that's, for me, that's why I feel the same way, to be honest with you. I feel the same way when it comes to how people talk about getting more black voters, getting more minority voters. Because there's the concept of, well, they'll never vote for us. And they don't go any deeper than, well, they vote 85% or whatever it might be, Democrat. They'll never vote for us. But that, to me, that's a loser mentality.
Yeah.
It's like, why bother racing in this race? That person's faster than me. Yeah. We'll never catch up.
And by the way, you have to race. There's no, you have to race. There's going to be an election. I agree. I think a lot of that, quite honestly, it's just going in there and breaking the narratives and lies that the MSM has been propagating for years about Republicans. But unfortunately, though, there are some Republicans that give them validity. There's some Republicans that say get caught saying something or doing something or being a part of something. It's like, you're giving credence to the stereotype that does not equally apply to all of us. So it's kind of like, you know, Republicans used to be the party of racism, blah, blah, blah. It's like, not really. You're confusing Dixiecrats, but you get where I'm going on that. But it's like, it's debunking these preconceived ideas that are generalized about an entire party. But when you look in today's contemporary political spectrum and you look at the left and say they're wanting to chop generals off of children, and then you look at the right and it's like, well, what is it about them that I really hate the most that even remotely compares to what the left's trying to do? That's why I'm saying the conditions are so perfect for a red wave to come in there and say, okay, look, we don't like Republicans, but dude, it's never been this bad. It has never been this bad. So I don't know, man.
I mean, I could tell you right now how you can get black voters, and it's not by doing what the Democrats do. Mm. You win local elections. Mm. The biggest problem is that it's a regional issue. Yes, there's the propaganda part, and that propaganda spreads culturally.
Oh yeah.
That's a part of it. But the biggest part of it is just demographic. It's pure demographics. Most black people, 60% of black Americans, basically live in states where there's a large urban city center. Mm. So they live within the city or in the surrounding areas. What's the biggest weak point for Republicans? The cities.
Yeah.
You go through all these different states that are purple or even blue. Pennsylvania, for example, the state comes out completely red until two cities are counted, and then they lose the entire state, right? That's their biggest weak point. They purposefully do not go into the cities. It's been like this not for 10 years, 20 years, but for some of these places, a century.
Yeah.
Right? But here's the thing. The reason why they don't have a cultural impact when it comes to many black Americans is because the very place that they live at is the very place that Republicans avoid going to.
Yeah, so or in living cases, in, be honest with
right, you. Right. And so in many cases, black Americans don't know a Republican. Mm. A Republican. There's a guy out here in Jersey who's running as a Republican. I think he went to Trenton. And he was knocking on doors in Trenton. And people were saying, you're the first Republican I've ever met. That's the reality for a lot of black Americans. And then the narrative becomes, they'll never vote for us. They hate us. Oh, no, no, no.
Yeah.
They don't even know you. And you don't campaign. You don't try to get their vote.
Yeah.
You don't try to do anything like that. And so it doesn't even have to. The sad part is that people think that getting a black person's vote means that you got to shout them out. You got to give them fried chicken and, you know, hang out with them. Let's bring out a rapper. You know, like, you don't have to do all that shit. Like, that's the stuff.
Pandering for black. Yeah, pandering. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Yeah, you don't have to do any of that stuff. You quite literally, this is why I say local politics matters. If you go and say, what's the biggest issue that you're facing? They're not going to tell you racism. Mm. They're going to tell you that the bus lines don't come over here. They're going to tell you that crime is really bad. You come in there as a Republican and say, I see your problem, I'm going to address that problem for you, and you do that and you win elections,
then
you'll start to see a change. But the very thing I was talking about earlier is that change is slow.
Yeah.
And so if giving to one black Republican candidate who's in an urban area and that person loses, well, we tried. You know, that's not trying, because you've been absent as a party for nearly a century in most of these places.
Yeah.
So I'm sorry, but I'm just looking as an analytical person.
Yeah.
If you want to win elections, why the fuck would you avoid cities? Like that just, it blows my mind. Why avoid the place that has the most people if you need more people to vote for you?
I think it's kind of like doubling down in areas that you know you're already going to dominate. It's like, okay, if we know we have these certain red districts that are just, okay, it's a lock-in, we know. Then it's like, yes, that money should be to go and basically move the, what they call the FLOT, forward line of troops, to where the blue meets red. You've got to go in there 100%. But unfortunately, when we have in the last elections, like, you know, the GOP's funding two different Republicans going against each other in Alaska, that's only because they want their guy to win. It's like, I'm sorry, I can't take you seriously as a party anymore. And I'll be honest with you, if you're still donating to the GOP, you're an idiot. And I'm not even a Democrat. I'm politically, I'm a constitutionalist. But like, if you're sending them money, you're paying Trump's legal bills. And even prior to this, we were, Adam, it was just, oh my God, you sit there and you're watching your team. It doesn't even have a chance in the Super Bowl, by the way, but you're watching your team play the other team and they're even worse, but you're losing. Why are you losing? Like, how is this happening? But unfortunately, we can't ask those questions. But Adam, we got to wrap this up, man. We're going at an hour and 25 minutes. So before we get out of here, where can they find you? Where can they get your book? And anything else that you'd have like to say to end the session or end the session? My God, to end the interview.
The session.
It has been a session. Yeah.
Like it was a Zoom call for a meeting. No, people can follow me on Twitter at wrong_speak. My Substack, definitely check out my Substack, adambcoleman.substack.com. All the information as far as where you could purchase the book, you can find it on my Substack, or honestly, just look for wherever you would buy your ebook or paperback from. If you want to skip all them and you want to buy directly from Wrong Speak Publishing, which is my company, you can go to wrongspeak.net and purchase it there, a signed copy of the book or a non-signed copy. And yeah, definitely check out all the other authors that we're publishing and we're trying to expand. I'm hoping very soon we have some big news we can announce in the coming weeks. And I'm just trying to do my thing. Oh, and check out Breaking Bread. Go to youtube.com/@wrong_speak for the series Breaking Bread, where I interview people over a meal.
That's cool.
Actually, I don't even really interview. We're just talking. It's a very casual conversation.
It's the way to do it. Well, and, Adam, thanks for coming on, my man.
Well, the last thing I want to say, I want to correct the record. You besmirched me. You said I didn't like white people in the very beginning. I love white people so much that I procreated with one.
Because everybody watches the show, they know who you are. It's like, so when I say something, it's like, he doesn't hate white people. Nah. And plus, it gets people to watch. It's like, oh, he isn't racist. Why do I feel bad about this? I wanted him to be, so I have someone to hate. It's the laws of social media, man. All right, Adam. I appreciate you, man. Thanks for coming on the show today. It's been an absolute honor and privilege, brother.
Yep,
and by here. Brother, I meant like you're my brother, not because you're black kind of brother. I'm sorry.
It's
I'll
okay.
Stop. Okay, sorry. You're my token. Be safe, brother. Great talking to you.
Thank you.
That does it for today's episode of the All-American Savage Show podcast. Appreciate you being here. Don't forget to go check out shellshockcbd.com to support the show. And guess what? John Ross is coming back. We're filming the first episode today that will premiere back on YouTube. Go check it out. Well, go follow the YouTube page. But yes, right after this show, right after this episode, we're filming our first John Ross video that we've done in quite some time, how to paint like a Palestinian protester. Appreciate you. Love you. And we'll see you tomorrow right here on the All-American Savage Show podcast.